to Holland.
Your worship, where are you? Ah, I've just seen the mayor arrive, so, and he's going to make a few comments, isn't he, your worship? I'll just give him a couple of minutes to have a breather, but look, most of you know me anyway. Joe Hollander, I chair the Palmerston Defence Heritage Advisory Group, and in concert with the City Library, we host these events, and I'm very pleased to say that we've invited our guest from 2017, I think it was, Masu?
Yeah.
When he was last here, and we had to hold it in the Distinction Hotel because around about 160, 170 turned up. Not quite as many here tonight, but not a bad number, nevertheless. So without further ado, I will hand you over to the Mayor to say a few words, and then I'll have great pleasure in introducing our speaker.
Kia ora everyone, and look, thanks for hanging on. I just had to pick up my father to bring him in because he was very keen to hear. I said thank you again for coming to Palmerston North and your second visit to us. Now this morning was fantastic to see so many people and so many young people at Remembrance Day, and that's the thing that I took notice of. But I think it was fantastic to have not only a youth address, obviously the service address, but we had your address as well from the Turkish perspective. So I think it's so valuable to understand all those different viewpoints. So looking forward to understanding a Turkish perspective of Gallipoli. And I've just come back from the States, and very interesting. I went to Arlington Cemetery and just to see the expanse and the American side of things there, again, from a New Zealander's point of view, was absolutely amazing and unreal. So, looking forward to hearing you, and I'll pass back to Joe. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Yeah, thanks very much, Grant. Really, I don't want to go into a lot of detail because many of you, particularly those historians amongst you, will know of Masoud's background. He comes eminently qualified, not only as a retired colonel in the Turkish Armed Forces, but also he taught at the Turkish Military Academy in Ankara, but a professor of military history in his own right, and currently a teaching fellow at the University of New South Wales in Canberra. So he certainly does know his topic, and if you have a look at his presentation, you'll see why. What we don't have is an idea of what happens on the other side. How have the Turks observed the Gallipoli campaign? And that's really the theme of Masoud's presentation tonight. So without further ado, I would ask you to welcome Professor Masoud Okoya.
Thank you very much for coming here after this busy day of commemoration and remembrance. When we talk about our past, we generally focus on what we remember. Memory, remembrance generally pops up in our minds, but we forget about the part that we are forgetting, the amnesia part of it. I choose the word amnesia because sometimes we deliberately try to forget some portions of our memory. And in the meantime, depending upon the demands of the current time, we may start to add some other details that never happened. So this is the part between the real history and the part with memory. And you may already know that memory studies right now is a very fashionable subject of the social sciences. It's a subdiscipline, and increasing number of the universities hiring memory studies experts to understand the current fashion with memory. Okay. What about the Turkish memory and remembrance of the Gallipoli campaign? If you take a look at the modern times, you get the feeling that it should be a huge business. Because every year, government agencies, institutions, private organizations, individuals invest a lot of time and effort to commemorate the Gallipoli victory. And every year this is building up. Millions of Turkish citizens every year visiting Gallipoli. Most of them doing it by their private means, but also local administrations, local mayorships, organizing trips for their school kids, ordinary citizens, elderly pensioners, etc. Millions, if you visit Gallipoli around 18 March time or during the spring or summer period, you will see hundreds of buses heading towards the battlefields, especially the Turkish monuments and cemeteries. And every year, the national park building new monuments, opening new cemeteries, or restoring some old buildings, fortresses, etc. Very recently, they open up the old medieval fortress at the Cape Palace. That fortress more or less destroyed during the First World War, but right now we have the fortress as a museum, recently opened. They open up the famous mine layer ship, Nusrat. They open up 1810, a very old fortress on the strait. So every year, new openings. And more movies about Gallipoli. Although most of them repeating the same topics, myths, characters, but there is a public demand for more. And when you look to the books, the bookshelves are mourning under the weight of the books every year published. I'm not talking about the articles, online pieces, etc. Hard cover books, soft cover books, lots of books every year. But the interesting thing was, this is completely new. Before 1980s, Gallipoli was just a local affair. And you most often come across this kind of news clipping saying that we forgot Gallipoli this year again. So the columnists accusing the public not remembering the heroes of Gallipoli, not paying respect to their ancestors. And at that time, only the peasants come together, gather around one of the monuments, prepare some food, and try to commemorate the fallen of the Gallipoli. And most of these guys should have some relatives they lost during the battle. But that was not the case during the campaign. When the Allied fleet forced the Strait Dardanelles and couldn't able to pass, it became a huge victory. Just at the very beginning, 18 March, when the Allied fleet unable to pass. Because at that stage, there was lots of uneasiness within the Ottoman leadership and also the nation. The Ottoman nation lost the Balkan Wars against the four small Balkan nations, lost most of the European provinces. So there was a kind of a fear that the Allies might able to pass easily. And when the Ottoman army able to stop it, it attracted lots of attention. It was used by war propaganda effectively in Ottoman, but also in German. The government, while the campaign is going on, organized lots of VIP visits. They call up artists to visit the battlefield, poets, novelists to write down the new legends of the campaign. They invited religious dignitaries to visit and give sermons at mosques about the heroic fighting going on. And of course, the Kaiser Wilhelm also visited the battlefield. They even organized exhibitions in Vienna and Berlin. Ottoman artists painting heroic paintings. Turkish Red Crescent Society organizing these exhibitions, even producing some German-like tennis badges to sell to collect donations. And when the Allies finally evacuated the peninsula, it had become a huge victory story. The first remembrance of the Gallipoli victory was held on 18 March 1916. So, the Turkish side commemorate Gallipoli not on 25th April or August or any other date. They commemorated on 18 March, the naval victory. Why is that? Two reasons. The one reason, because the government and the Ottoman nation gained their confidence on 18 March. The second reason, because all the army divisions removed and sent to other fronts, only the navy guys remain, and of course they celebrate and commemorate their own victory. But this 18 March commemoration established a tradition that's still going on. Although during 18 March, they in total we lost around 250 casualties, well less than the losses suffered during the land campaign, but still that is the date of Turkish commemoration. And the government immediately started to build new monuments, marble rolls of honors, and the publications published the fallen officers, fallen soldiers, their names, their faces. So this was a very deliberate campaign that the government planning to capitalize on after the war. And of course the units, while still on the peninsula, started to build some small rudimentary but monuments to show their presence, that 19th Division was there, 27th Infantry Regiment was there on, and part of their victory. And surprisingly, the official military history writing started in 1916, well before everyone, and the draft volumes already published during the war. However, as all of you know, the Ottoman Empire lost the war with its allies, Germany, Austria, Hungary, and Bulgaria. So, in the end, the Ottomans got defeated, and with the humiliation of the defeat, the soldiers started to return back, and all of a sudden, all the pleasant feelings about the victory lost, and the Allied fleets, after the signing of the armistice, safely passed the Dardanelles. So, during the war, like the Spanish, the Ottomans saying that there's no passage from the Dardanelles, but they passed after the armistice. Even a Greek warship reached Istanbul. The Allied occupation army started to occupy different parts of the country, and this created another war for Turkey. But in the meantime, the Australians, the British, immediately arrived to the Gallipoli. The Australians arranged the famous Gallipoli mission of their historian Lee in order to document and find about some of the questions about what had happened during the campaign. But in the meantime, Imperial Workplace Commission started to create the famous military cemeteries. And the first Allied commemoration of the peninsula also started to take place after 1919. This was the first one on 25th April 1919 near Anzac Cove. This was 2 years later. But the Turks started to fight another war. So in Turkey we don't have a Remembrance Day because the First World War did not end on 11th November 1918 for the Turks. We continued to fight 4 more years and war finally ended in September 1922. The interesting part is most of the people, including the army officers, labeled the war 10 years war because the war actually started with the Balkan Wars in 1912 and continued 10 years with small intervals, and for the people have little regard the names of the wars separately. Anyway, the New Zealanders did something surprisingly quick by building the biggest monument on time and opening up on 12 May 1925. Just 2 years after the Turkish nationals' victory against the British, the Greeks, Armenians, and the French. And they managed to organize a ship trip, so there were lots of New Zealanders, family members, mothers, fathers visiting the battlefield, being at the site during the opening of the famous monument at Chinook Bayou. And this gave a kind of an inspiration to some that the Turkish side should also build monuments. In 1916, a new organization was created to organize building a meaningful and huge monument on the peninsula to show everyone that the Turks also have a monument of their own. Because when you visit Gallipoli, you will understand that size does matters. In 1931, the Turkish public for the first time watched the famous British movie, Tell England. But it was introduced in Turkey under the name Çanakkale. Although most of you already watched the Tell England, it's more tragic, romantic issue. In Turkey, it was understood as a heroic showing of the Turkish soldiers. Although the directors had no intention to do that, but our public understood from a very heroic perspective, saying that even the British shoot a movie about us. And in 1934, this guy, Şükrükaya, Minister of Interior, read the Atatürk's famous speech on Gallipoli Peninsula. At that time, there was a few journalists listening to the speech. A total of 25 or etc. people around a small monument. It didn't become popularized. It gained its popularity later on with the help of the Australians. And the human bones remain on the fields like that for many years to come. And visitors like this guy who visited the battlefield in 1933 published his finding and saying that what kind of a nation we are, our fathers' bones are still on the battlefield and we are not doing anything. We should have cemeteries, proper cemeteries, like the English cemeteries, because For the Turks at that time, they didn't pay any attention about the differences between the nations. They just called it not British but English. Wonderful English cemeteries, so why we don't have it? And during the Second World War, although Turkey was not part of the war, but still mobilized part of the population, so there was a reinforced army corps on Gallipoli Peninsula, and they had nothing to do. As you know, there are some ex-military men here within the audience. Officers try hard to keep the soldiers busy. So they started building up new roads. They started foresting the peninsula. At that time, it was completely bare. So the wonderful forest that we are seeing right now built up thanks to the military labors. And for the first time in history, for the Muslim nation, they created a bone depot. This one, Nuri Yavut Monument. I mean, in Islam, you need to have separate graves. So collecting the bones like the French or the Greek Orthodox, not the tradition, but because the amount of the human bones on the train, so one of the general decided to collect all of them, created an ossuary, and built this monument on top of it. But still, there's no monument. And starting from 1950s, the government sponsored veterans to visit Gallipoli. Not frequently, but enough to satisfy the public demand to do something. And in 1956, finally, they started to build a monument large enough to satisfy everyone and bigger than the British and New Zealand monument. So the bigness, the size really matters. So the current monument, it took more than 4 years to build the structure. But when they opened in 1960, it was still half finished. The current monument was finally finished in 2022. Very recently. But the funny thing is, when they open up the monument, instead of satisfying everyone, they started to blame it. Corruption, delays, half-finished structure of the monument. And because there were not proper roads to reach the monument, so the commemoration continued to be done in Çanakkale, in the big city, so the monument remained there half-finished. And these discussions continue on up until 2022. The funny thing was, an officer just on the opposite side of the Çanakkale city, there was at that time some ammunition bunkers, and there was a captain in charge of this small ammunition depot, and this captain decided one day that, okay, we have enough space and somebody already cut down the bushes for another purpose. Let us create a small monument, he said. He took out the cigarette package from his pocket, gave it to one of the general lieutenant and saying that, I want this symbol of the soldiers blown up to 55 meters height. We have leftovers paint. So create the monument, and right next to the monument these words from a famous poem written for Turkish Independence War. So this company commander create this monument in less than 2 months without asking any money from anyone by using military labor, and right now this is the most memorable monument on the peninsula. Because you cannot escape this. It is just opposite the Dardanelles. Every ship passing the strait sees it, and it's a very economical, done in a very quick way, and it was just the idea of a captain bold enough, and by using the secret package he created this. In 1962, finally, the Turkish side shoot the Turkish movie dedicated to Gallipoli campaign by making use of military units, thousands of soldiers, and genuine weapons, uniforms, even some unit colors. But still, this movie did not satisfy the people, find it very artificial. And finally, before the 75th anniversary, the government started the famous National Park Plan, and part of this plan to build monuments and cemeteries for the fallen. And as a part of this program, because all the time the British, Australian, New Zealand monuments establishing the standard, the Turkish side built up this Atatürk's monument next to the New Zealand monument, saying, asserting that we are the owners of this land and we are the ones who actually won the battle. And if you visit the New Zealand monument, you cannot escape from Atatürk gazing on you. So act properly. Don't do anything foolish. Okay, the Turkish side started to construct cemeteries, but instead of writing the names of the fallen, they decided to write down only the provinces. And instead of regenerating, organizing the real cemeteries, they created mock cemeteries. Why is that? Because with mock cemeteries, you can create any design you want, the shape, the size, and proximity to the road. Because the real cemeteries, all of them located at the very bottom, difficult to reach places. And at the same time, because the cemetery is symbolic, you can work out these tombstones, any shape, any name. And depending upon the demands coming from the public, they even started to put some of the provinces not represented in the original cemetery. Because initially our guys decided to name only 67 Turkish provinces, but people started to say, okay, but my grandfather was from Damascus, my grandfather was from Salonika, so you need to put the name of Salonika, you need to put the name of Damascus, you need to put the name of Sarajevo on the tombstones. And they even put a Greek army doctor's name, but there was one catch. This guy was killed in action in Caucasus front, not on Gallipoli. So this kind of symbolic acts should have some limits. But our guys try many things. And right now, because of the public demand, they started to construct real cemeteries for the real fallen. Starting with the new construction of the monuments, a new understanding of the campaign also born. It was there, but not apparent. Starting with the rise of the political Islam in Turkey, the Islamic version of the Gallipoli campaign also born. And this Islamic version, putting more emphasis not on the generals, officers, or soldiers, but some holy figures, some angels coming from the heavens, guiding the soldiers to victory, and in case of big difficulties, green clouds descending from the heavens, killing all the foreign enemies on the Islamic motherland. The problem with the rise of the Islamic version, they failed to create an understandable and believable historic version of what they are calling. So instead of trying to write down their own version of the military history of the campaign, they just publish collection of fables, myths and stories telling how the religion was important and it was the main element behind the victory. And right now we have green tools. So conservatives not participating in the regular touristic tours, they have their separate tours, and they are not visiting the famous battlefields. They are visiting different places. So in addition to the conventional tourist routes of the Turks, which millions passing, green tours serving to much smaller numbers with alternative touristic routes. And with the rise of the property value of the peninsula, we started to see new foreign monuments. 2021, the famous Caribou of the Newfoundland. You know the Caribou's tale, the places in which Newfoundland regiment fought, and this was their last monument. In 2022, a monument erected for the Bosnians. That is because there are some Bosnian villages nearby, and they lost their grandfathers in their campaign, and they lobbied to create a monument under the flag of Bosnia. We have a Hungarian monument. It's a small one, but still we have it. And we have a monument for Azerbaijan. Although, according to the archive studies, only four guys from Azerbaijan got killed on the peninsula. But having a place on the legend of Gallipoli is so great that the Azeri government lobbied to get a piece of land and construct their monument. And what about the future monuments? The Irish already had their plot, but they are yet to build their monuments. There's a possibility that the Indian government would construct a monument, but the chances are Pakistan would move it before the Indians to have their separate monuments. And there are other possibilities. Right now, the Albanians are asking for a monument for the Albanian soldiers that got killed it on the peninsula. The Kosovo, Sanjak, and of course the Arabs, the Syrians especially, asking to have a monument, but because of the Syrian civil wars, that project fell down, but you never know. Okay, up to this point, I mentioned about what is apparent on the peninsula. Okay, if you visit the peninsula, you will not find the Germans. Okay, there were not many Germans on the peninsula, only there was one engineering company, artillery experts, staff officers, pilots, and of course, Liman von Sanders, the commander of the whole Turkish units on the peninsula. So you expect to see something related with Germany on the peninsula, but you cannot. Why is that? The problem starts with 1932. Germany would like to have a monument on the peninsula. At that time they started bargaining, but when the Nazis came to power, they wanted to construct a huge monument. And the Turkish side said no. And when the Nazis received the answer no, they decided to execute all the German graves, move them to Istanbul, to their official cemetery. So thereby, in 1936, the Nazi Germany deliberately erased the German elements from the peninsula. And because of the current political issue in Germany, neither the German armed forces or the German public has any wish to have the German presence appear on the peninsula again. Although First World War is completely different from the Nazis and the Second World War, but there's no appetite in Germany to have a German monument on the peninsula. And very recently, we discovered that some of the German graves are still there on the peninsula. And it was communicated to the German government. They said, sorry, we have no interest about them. So this is the end of my presentation.
You are the
So it's less than 45 minutes, I guess.
Can't go on for more than 45 minutes because people are getting hungry. Because he's done so well. Questions.
If we have time, I am happy to answer questions.
Yeah.
Mark. Hi, good evening. Mark Arnett. Is this the most popular campaign battle in Turkey? Or are there other more celebrated campaigns? I'm surprised how popular it is.
It is the most popular one.
Is it? Yes.
There are other runner-ups, but Gallipoli is the most popular one, and it became the most popular one after 1980s. And we have our own Gettysburg syndrome, that is Sarıkamış at the Caucasus front, in which we lost more than 70,000 soldiers against the Russian, half of them frozen, due to the winter campaign. So that is a complete defeat, but like the role of Gettysburg for the Confederation, Sarıkamış played a noble defeat, how we lost our soldiers. They died on top of the mountains, but they tried to defend the country. So that is another runner-up, but not as famous as Gallipoli.
Right, thank you, Sue. The other thing I was wondering about was, how was it received by the Turkish to wake up in the morning and to see the enemy gone? How did you feel about that?
Okay, in terms of there are two answers. The one is military answer. So, how the Allies able to evacuate the peninsula without losing anyone? That was one of the biggest success they ever did. They planned it. They organized it properly, there's no denying about it, but the Turkish side was aware about all these preparations. But when Liman von Sanders and other generals tried to force it, the soldiers showed that they had no appetite for it. Because everybody knows that this front war on peninsula ending, and they didn't want to be the last soldier got killed for a campaign ending. So, although they have awareness about it, they try to bring some heavy weapons, including the Austria-Hungarian mortars, heavy mortars, in order to give a punishing blow for the evacuation. They couldn't do it. After the evacuation of the Anzac, Liman von Sanders launched several offensives against the Liman von Sanders launched several offensives against the Hellas, and he found out that the soldiers and officers had no appetite to force it. So everybody aware about it, but they did nothing.
Now you say that that was the military perspective. Is there another perspective?
The another perspective is the green perspective.
Right.
Yeah. So the heavens worked for the Turks, and one day nobody died. All disappeared.
Yeah.
We don't know where they went.
Other questions? Yeah.
The word Kanakale is repeated a lot in those video, those clips that you showed us. Is that an interpretation of Gallipoli, is it?
Well, In Turkish, we don't say Gallipoli campaign, we say Çanakkale campaign. That is because the big city, Çanakkale. So Çanakkale is the name of the city. The English version is Dardanelles. So Dardanelles is English or Western version of Çanakkale. So in Turkish we said Çanakkale battles. We don't say Gallipoli campaign in Turkish.
Thank you for the wonderful presentation. My question is like, you know, the British Empire during the 1914 in the India, British Indian Army. So a lot of Muslim men were employed in the army and to fight against the Turkish in Gallipoli. So what are the impressions or the emotions of the Turkish when they were fighting with their Muslim brothers in the war?
Okay, so as you know, at that time the British had a mentality related with India. They divided the Indians into two groups, warrior groups and non-warrior ones. So they conscripted from the groups they labeled as warriors. So most of the Muslims that ended up at Çanakkale, Palestine, coming from Punjab. Right now, Punjab divided in two, some parts part of Pakistan, the other parts India. The British initially had lots of question marks about it, especially the commanding general Ian Hamilton. And Ian Hamilton actively lobbied to get Gurkhas instead of Muslims. And he did succeed in some aspects. And the Ottomans had a kind of an expectation that the Muslim Indians would not fight against the Ottomans. They would immediately escape from the British lines and join the Ottomans to fight against the Christian British. It didn't happen. A few individuals deserted to the Ottoman lines, but that was it. Both sides had capitalized on the religious identity, but the Indians fighting on Gallipoli, most of them professional soldiers. Later on, the British Empire conscripted more from other regions of India, but the initial Indian soldiers, all of them professionals, already had experience, especially in Afghanistan, Afghan border. So they remained loyal to the empire, most of them. But that's a subject that needs to be examined and researched, because I find out some of the Indian officers that or Indian NCOs that deserted and joined the Ottoman side. Later, these guys became important Indian nationalists or sparked a nationalist fire within the body. But as far as I know, there is no research about them.
Any other questions?
After the Allies landed where they did, is there any way they could have beaten the Ottoman Empire with the Dardanelles?
No. Because the issue was the British misread the experiences of the Balkan Wars. Four small Balkan nations managed to beat the Ottoman army because the army divided into political groups. So the Ottoman army fought against each other than defending country against the Balkan nations. But loss of European provinces created such a humiliation that the army tried to clean up itself from the stain of the Balkan defeats. The British were expecting that by showing the Union Jack, all the Ottoman soldiers, Turkish soldiers would flee, and it would be an easy sail to Istanbul, Constantinople. When this did not happen, they should get the understanding not to continue. But because they were defeated and the British prestige was so important, they were defeated by an Oriental nation, so they should teach them a lesson. When you start a campaign, you should have a political aim. You should have a strategy, a military strategy, and you build up everything according to your aim and your strategy. The British did not have an apparent political aim. They didn't have a strategy. And even if you capture the peninsula, clean up the streets from the mines, silence all the fortresses, let the navy pass the strait, you still have to capture Istanbul, kick the Ottomans out. I mean, even if you pass the Dardanelles, there will be lots of things you need to do to achieve your military aim. Churchill and other British leaders were looking for an easy victory, and they had navy that they couldn't use. Like the Maslow's understanding, you have a hammer and you see all the problems as nails. So British had a navy and they wanted to use it. If they didn't use it in front of Gallipoli, most probably they would use it against Syria. So, because there were other plans how to make better use of the navy. So Gallipoli turned out to be a kind of a luck for the British Navy not to waste itself in another place.
Any other questions?
The question that's always puzzled me is that the Gallipoli campaign, you know, the Ottoman Turks win, and it's a land campaign, and you have Kemal Atatürk and so forth. But the day the Turks commemorate is the 18th of March, which is a naval victory, which is before all the fighting starts.
I mean, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, do they look at any other dates during the campaign apart from the 18th of March, or is it the 18th of March is the day they commemorate?
Well, the army guys did not have chance, because after the evacuation, all the units started to transfer to different fronts. Initially, they were planning to create a new field army to be used at the Eastern Front to help the Austria-Hungarians. But in January 1916, the Russians achieved a breakthrough at Caucasus Front. So most of the units had to send to the Caucasus Front. So the army guys had no chances to think about a commemoration date. And only the navy guys remained on the ground under the control of a German admiral. And the German admiral decided to promote their victory, 18 March, at the cost of the army's other victories or more bloody battles. I mean, logically, we should commemorate the evacuation date, either December or January. And there is currently a small group lobbying to change the date, but I don't think they will succeed, because 18 March well established. And thanks to the your Australian cousins, not you, because if you are very nationalistic Kiwis, you should do something about this, because the Australian presence is growing and growing every year. Right now, most Turks know nothing about the British or French, although they have monuments, names, etc. Most Turks right now thinking that we fought against the Australians and New Zealanders. So they were good guys, good chaps. We liked them. But the Australians still continue to steal your role. So in the near future, the Gallipoli campaign story in Turkey transformed into a battle, a campaign between the Australians and the Turks. So the greedy Aussies stealing from you. So you need to do something about it. Although I have an Australian passport. My grandfather was killed by the Australians.
Well, on that note, any final question before we round out?
I've got one. Bear in mind the nationalistic fervour sweeping, well, in Turkey. How has Orban and the rest, how do they look at Gallipoli?
Well, currently Gallipoli transformed into something completely different from the other battles or wars, because there's one big lack of the Gallipoli. It didn't cause much civilian casualties. After the British naval bombardment, the Ottomans decided to evacuate the whole peninsula. So, and Gallipoli is isolated geography. So it was a bit hygienic war, not affecting the civilians. Conventional military, fighting against the conventional military, no irregulars, the things that made the wars worse. All of them absent. And because we are latecomers, imitating mostly the Australians and New Zealanders in terms of commemoration, the current nationalistic wave is not affecting anything about the Gallipoli, so it's safe. So if you visit Gallipoli, you will not get any kind of troubles. Instead, people see you as good friends. We fought against each other very well, very good, etc. Because of the character of the Gallipoli. And as you know, it's an oscillation, like economy. It rises, it falls. So these things also change. Turkey right now passing through a turbulent political and economic process. But it is also something related with the region. The Middle East passing through turbulence. Problems occurring in Caucasus. You never know what will happen in the Balkans. And there's a war going on in Ukraine. A civil war in Syria. Iraq in a very problematic situation. The Gaza war affecting terribly the Turkish politics. And there's a possibility that there might be a war in Iran. And if a war starts related with Iran, that would be a nightmare for the whole region and also Turkey. So tough times, but Gallipoli is safe.
All right, well, we will probably be here for quite a long time debating all of these topics. But I just wanted everybody to show their appreciation once again. Present you a bit of excess baggage and our appreciation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.